God is in control. Even in a book in which he's not mentioned, he is in control. And sometimes we see it in minor events, we see it in major events, that when it comes to God's sovereign power, there really are no coincidences, are there?
Proclaiming God's love and truth for you and your family. Wonder Lake Bible Church.
You know, in between songs there, and I thought I heard it again when we were finished, there was the voice of one of our younger attenders here today that said, uh-oh, did you hear that? Uh-oh. No, I'm not quite sure what she was referring to, but it made me think, you know, sometimes that happens in circumstances and events in our lives, doesn't it? Uh-oh, we didn't see that coming. Things don't work out quite the way we had intended or wanted or planned. Sometimes that's a good thing. We didn't see that coming. It's a blessing of some kind, a good thing of some kind. Other times, we didn't see that coming and we're not so pleased about it. But things didn't go according to the way it appeared they were going to. And sometimes we see in the scriptures how God engineers events, and I would say engineers a surprising turn of events for his purposes. And here in Esther, we see how God engineered a surprising turn of events which resulted in the salvation of his people, the Jews, from total destruction. So we're going to continue then now in this series in Esther with a surprising turn of events. Now we're going to move quickly through the heart of the story of Esther today. Move quickly through the heart of the story here today, and then next week we will focus then on what are some of the principles or lessons then that we might learn through this story. But here we see this surprising turn of events, and we see once again that God is in control. That is our theme here, that God is in control of minor events. Last week it was a decision by a queen not to come when she was summoned. God is in control of that. He's in control of minor events and major events. God is in control of all. So what have we seen? Well, we saw that the events of Esther took place in between the first return of the Jews to Jerusalem, which was led by Zerubbabel, and the second return that was led by Ezra. And the theme of the book is God's control, God's sovereign control, even if he's not mentioned in the text, as he's not explicitly mentioned here in the text of Esther. And so the story of Esther begins with King Xerxes, the Persian king, or very early in his reign, and he's throwing this massive 180-day feast or banquet in order to display his great wealth and splendor and majesty. And all of the nobles and governing officials of the empire were there. And it's like there was a reason for this, why he was doing it, that he was attempting to engage the support of the nobles as he, Xerxes, planned his invasion of Greece. That he had designs on expanding the empire and he wanted to invade Greece. And so he needed the support of the nobles and it would take a great deal of time to plan that. And it's likely that's what was going on here with this. Of course, history tells us that ultimately that did not work out too well for him there. We might say, uh-oh, about that one as well. Well, toward the end of the feast, after a lot of heavy drinking, King Xerxes calls for his beautiful queen, Vashti, to come before him and the nobleman, wearing her royal crown, likely meaning wearing only her crown. And Vashti was not very thrilled with the idea of parading around naked in front of a bunch of drunken men, and so she refused to do that. And meanwhile, the king then was not happy with that because he saw it as a major display of disrespect, which humiliated him in front of all of the noblemen. And so the king's advisors then recommended that the king depose Vashti as queen and never allow her to come into his presence again, and that is what the king did. And we saw then how that minor event, we might think it's a minor thing, the decision that a queen makes to say, no, I'm not going to go to that, I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to display myself in front of all of them, how that decision would eventually give rise to the deliverance of an entire people from destruction. Well, moving on in the story then, some time has passed since that happened, and the king begins to regret his decision. If you look at Esther chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "Later, when the anger of King Xerxes had subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what he had decreed about her." Now, I think the text is telling us that he missed her. He regretted that decision. One of the laws of the Persian Empire here was is that when a king had ruled or decreed something, that was it. It could never be changed. Now, they could make other laws then that would somehow impact on that previous law, but the law could not be overturned. And I think now some time has passed, and his anger has subsided, and he is regretting what happened. He misses her. And so his attendants propose then that a search be launched then for a new queen. And so commissioners went to every province of the empire, and they were there to bring beautiful young virgins to the king in order for him to choose a new queen. And that is when we are introduced to Esther and to her older caretaking cousin, Mordecai. Let's turn to the book of Esther chapter 2. Esther chapter 2, we're going to start in verses 5 through 8. It says, "Now there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin named Mordecai, son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, who had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, among those taken captive with Jehoiachin, king of Judah. Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father nor mother. And this girl, who was also known as Esther, was lovely in form and features, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. And when the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Haggai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge of the harem." I will stop there for a moment. So this decree had gone out, and all of these young girls had been brought there. And the king was going to choose a new queen from among them. And so one by one, they would each go in to see the king, to spend a night with the king. And then eventually the time would come for Esther to do so, and she did. And we see what happened next then. In verse 17, we skip down there. It says, "Now the king was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any other of the other virgins. And so he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his nobles and officials, and he proclaimed a holiday throughout the provinces and distributed gifts with royal liberality." So now then, Vashti has been deposed, and now there is a new queen, and it is this young Jewish woman named Esther. And Esther then has a cousin named Mordecai, an older cousin, Mordecai, who was a Jew. And we also, reading that that family line there, we see that he is a descendant. He is a descendant of King Saul. And you might think, what does that have to do with anything? Well, it's going to have some significance in our story in just a little bit. Now, Esther's Hebrew name is Hadassah, and her Persian name, Esther, then. She had been orphaned, and she was cared for then by her older cousin, Mordecai. And we do not know this for sure, but Mordecai may have been a government official, a lower government official of some kind. And so when Esther is chosen to be a part of the king's harem, Mordecai cautions her and tells her not to tell anyone that she is Jewish. Now, we don't know the full circumstances there, but apparently we can see already there was an anti-Semitic feel that was developing there already at that time. And so he tells her, don't reveal to anyone that you're Jewish. And so of all of these young women that are brought before the king, text tells us that Esther found favor in his eyes, and she was then elevated to the position of queen. Now, about that time, we are told of another event that would prove significant in the story later. Remember we said that I think the theme of the book of Esther overall is that God is in control. Even in a book in which he's not mentioned, he is in control. And sometimes we see it in minor events. We see it in major events, as we'll see later. But also, even in little things that we might consider just coincidental, that when it comes to God's sovereign power, there really are no coincidences, are there? That there is a significance and a meaning, ultimately, in these things. And so, we're told then, in Esther chapter 2, verses 21 and 22, about another little event, it would seem, that would prove significant, very significant, in the story later. Let's look at Esther chapter 2, verse 21. It says, during the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and told Queen Esther, who in turn reported it to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. So now Esther is made queen, and shortly after that then, her cousin Mordecai discovers or overhears of a plot. Two of the king's men, they were angry about something, and they decide that they're going to try to assassinate the king. And Mordecai then just happens to hear about this, to hear about this plot against the king. Reports it to the king, who reports it to Esther, who reports it to the king. And Esther is sure to mention Mordecai. Well, the king investigates, and it is found out that it is true. And the men are hanged. But importantly then, all of these events, what had happened and who it was, all of these things were recorded in the royal archives. Yes, they had records then too. Just like, I don't know if they had something as large as our federal government and the bureaucracy of that, but they had a bureaucracy too. And part of that was keeping records and track of everything. And so this event, what had happened, this plot, who it was, who had revealed it, all of these things were written down in the royal record. Now, do you think there's significance in that, or is the author just telling it for no good reason? No, there's a significance in that fact. So he discovers the plot, and it's written down in the record that he was the one who informed. So then we are now introduced to another character in the story, a man named Haman. Let's turn to Esther chapter 3. Esther chapter 3, start at verse 1. It says, after these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. So now here's this man Haman who is elevated to be like a chief among the nobles. It says, all the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. And then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, why do you disobey the king's command? And day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. And therefore they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, for he had told them he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. And in the 12th year of King Xerxes, in the first month, the month of Nisan, they cast the pur, that is, the lot, in the presence of Haman, to select a day and month. And the lot fell on the 12th month, the month of Adar. So here we're told of this man named Haman, and how he despised the Jews in general, and Mordecai in particular. Now, it's quite possible then that Haman, we're told that he is a descendant of Agag. He's an Agagite, a descendant of Agag. And you might go, well, who is Agag? Who is King Agag? Well, Agag was the king of the Amalekites. Now, you may recall from the book of Exodus that the Amalekites, what, they were the first and the original and the some might even think the biggest of the enemies of Israel, of the Israelites, if you remember that story. And Agag, the king of the Amalekites, was defeated by King Saul and killed by the prophet Samuel. So now here comes Mordecai. He is a descendant of whom? Saul. And here is Haman. He is a descendant of Agag. And there's that whole story there. You have the descendant of the Amalekites and the Jews. And this battle and this hatred continues. So now this conflict then between Haman and Mordecai, it mirrors that ancient struggle. And so the hatred of the descendant of the Amalekites for the Jews continues, though, all these centuries later. And aren't you glad that today those blood feuds in the Middle East that last many centuries don't happen anymore? Aren't you glad we're done with that in the Middle East? No. Just like that stuff, that hatred of peoples that goes on for centuries. It was then. So Haman plots. He says, not just this Mordecai. I'm not going to get rid of him. I'm going to get rid of all the Jews. So he's going to destroy them all. And then, okay, well, we need to figure out, when are we going to do this? When is the time going to come for us to destroy all the Jews? And so it says that they throw the pur, P-U-R, the pur. It's the lot. It'd be like what we would call equivalent of, like, say, throwing dice or something like that today. Just something you'd throw to determine something. Like flipping a coin or doing something like that to determine something. And so they would throw the pur, and out of that they would get the month, the time when this would happen. Meanwhile then, coincidentally, Mordecai finds out about it. Finds out about this plot, and he goes to Esther to intervene, to see what she can do to help her people. And as she's told about this, at first, Esther is afraid. Even though this is a horrible thing that's about to happen, she is afraid of approaching the king about this. Why? Well, because there were some strange rules or customs that the Persians had. And one of them was for the Persian king, that if you were not directly summoned by the king, you could be put to death for coming into the presence of the king. If he didn't call you and you just show up, you could be put to death. And so if you just showed up without being summoned, if the king extended his scepter to you, then your life was spared and you were allowed. If he didn't extend that scepter to you, you'd be executed on the spot. And so now she's being told, go talk to the king. In other words, what? Her life, her own life, is on the line, because if she just walks into his presence, he doesn't extend that scepter, she's dead. So she was a little concerned about that. But eventually, this is what happens in Esther chapter 4, verse 10. It says, then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that he be put to death. And the only exception to this is for the king to extend the gold scepter to him and spare his life. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. She's reluctant, knowing it might cost her. It says, when Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this. And then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast as you do. And when this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. So Mordecai enlists the help. And I find it interesting here, a couple of lines here. One is, for such a time as this. And if you don't, deliverance will arise from another place. And Esther saying, if I perish, I perish. First off, God is sovereign, isn't he? He is in control. And yet, people still make decisions and choices and are responsible. And in fact, Mordecai is saying, well, if you don't do this, God is going to make it happen another way. How did Mordecai know all that? I don't know. I think clearly he was walking with God, wasn't he? So he said, Esther, I know you're afraid, but if you don't do this, God is going to do it some other way then. Oh, and by the way, you and your family are going to die. And then also, though, what? But who knows? How did you become queen? Isn't it an amazing thing that here is this girl from the, just all of a sudden is just elevated to the position of queen in the empire? Who knows that that didn't happen, but for what? For such a time as this, now that our people are in mortal danger, literally, God has put you, how do you not know that God has put you in that position to do this? So in other words, what, Esther, is she afraid? Of course, but how do you not know that God has put you there to do exactly this, to deliver our people, to be used by God to deliver our people? And I think that infuses Esther with courage and faith. And so she says what? First what? Have the people fast for me. And again, people say, how come in the book of Esther there's no mention of God? There isn't anything about praying or anything. Well, that's true, but it does talk about fasting. And when one fasts, what generally goes along with fasting? Prayer, right? And when one prays, who is one praying to as the Jew? God, right? So she says, all right, I will do this, but I'm going to need your help, folks. And not just you, Morta, but all of our people. And that's true, isn't it? We need one another, don't we? Esther was afraid for her life. And even though, yes, it seemed like, yeah, that, you know, perhaps God has put me in this position for this, she still asked for the people to fast and pray for her as she did the same thing. And in the end, she resolved herself, what? Well, if I perish, I perish. She's going to do what she now knows she's been called to do. Even though it scared her, she's going to do it. And sometimes that's how it is. God calls us to do things and we may be scared, but we do it anyway, right? And there's no guarantee of the results, but we do it anyway. We're obedient anyway. Hebrews chapter 11, the great hall of fame of faith there, right? They were all, what, faithful. And sometimes the results were grand and great. And other times, what? They were persecuted. They were martyred for their faith. But they were all men and women of faith. So Esther says, all right, I'll do this. So she has a plan. She goes, Esther 5. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. And the king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall facing the entrance. And when he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out to her the gold scepter that was in his hand. And so Esther approached and touched the tip of his scepter. And then the king asked, what is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom it will be given you. So Esther doesn't immediately say everything, though. So she's like, if it pleases the king, replied Esther, let the king, together with Haman, come today to a banquet I have prepared for him. So she doesn't just go into the king and just let it all out there. There's a plan. She says, I'm going to prepare a banquet for you. And by the way, can Haman come, you know, your number two guy here? I'd like him to come to the banquet too. So she approaches the king. And again, even though God is not directly mentioned, his presence is very clear here through it all, isn't he? And we see how God then answers their prayers and the fasting. She's granted her request, but she needs a little time just to set things up right. Meanwhile, there's another little coincidence that happens in the story. Remember, she called for Haman to come and be a part of this banquet too. And then something else happens. The king can't sleep that night. You ever had difficulty sleeping? Can't sleep and your mind is... And you just think, what, I need something to occupy my mind with. Maybe you get a book and read that for a while. Well, the king had a little trouble sleeping and he needed something to read. I wonder what he's going to read. Find out. It says, that night the king could not sleep. And so he ordered the book of the Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought in and read to him. And it was found recorded there that Mordecai had exposed Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. What honor and recognition has Mordecai received for this? The king asked. Nothing has been done for him, his attendants answered. And the king said, who is in the court? Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the palace to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows he had erected for him. So Mordecai then, he was going to get all the Jews, but he was going to start with Mordecai where he built these gallows, what, 75 feet high. So his attendants answered, Haman is standing in the court. Bring him in, the king ordered. And when Haman entered, the king asked him, what should be done for the man the king delights to honor. Who's Haman thinking about? The king says, what should be done for the man I want to honor? He's thinking about himself, right? It says, now Haman thought to himself, who is there that the king would rather honor than me? So he answered the king, for the man the king delights to honor, have them bring a royal robe the king has worn and a horse the king has ridden, one with a royal crest placed on its head. And then let the robe and horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor and lead him on the horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. Go at once, the king commanded Haman. So he's all excited. He's set up. He's going to have this great show of pomp and celebration and circumstance for himself, right? Or so he thinks. So the king says what? Get the robe and the horse and do just as you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew who sits at the king's gate. Uh-oh. Do not neglect anything you have recommended. I love the turnabout on Haman here. And he is forced... What, he's going there to speak to the king about hanging him. And instead, he's being ordered by the king to do what? To honor him. Well, Esther had wanted another banquet. There was the first one, and now the day comes for the second one. Here's the ultimate uh-oh. Didn't see that coming. Says, so the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther, and as they were drinking wine on that second day, the king asked again, Queen Esther, what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom it will be granted. And then Queen Esther answered, if I have found favor with you, O king, and if it pleases your majesty, grant me my life. This is my petition. And spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold for destruction and slaughter and annihilation. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet, because no such distress would justify disturbing the king. And King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, who is he? Where is the man who has dared to do such a thing? And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this vile Haman. And then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. I want to tell you what happens next here. I don't know if it's just me or what. Maybe there's something wrong with me in this, but I can't help but laugh at the little thing that happens here next. You talk about bad timing. a bad time to trip. This was it. At least that's what I think happened here. It says, verse 7, the king got up in a rage, left his wine, and went out into the palace garden. But Haman, realizing that the king had already decided his fate, stayed behind to beg Queen Esther for his life. Now here's the little oops. Just as the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining. And the king exclaimed, will he even molest the queen while she is with me in the house? He's going over there to beg for his life, and he falls on her. I think he just trips. You talk about a bad time to trip and fall. And he falls on her right as the king comes walking back in the room. Now, is that funny? Is that just me, or is that funny? Again, is this all coincidence? And I think what happened here, I think an angel pushed him. I really do. And if you might think, oh, that's crazy. Well, you know what? There's actually an ancient Jewish tradition that it was the angel Gabriel who pushed him, and that's why he fell on her. I don't know if that's true or not. But I think it's a pretty interesting case of bad timing. That's a bad time to trip and fall on someone, don't you think? So he says, will he even molest the queen while she is with me in the house? And as soon as the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. That is, they put like a veil over him for someone you're going to hang. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs attending the king, said, a gallows 75 feet high stands by Haman's house. He had it made for Mordecai, who spoke up to help the king. Uh-oh, this is just going from bad to worse here for the king, or for Haman, isn't it? And so the king said, hang him on it. And so they hanged Haman on the gallows he had prepared for Mordecai. And then the king's fury subsided. So this was really awful timing on the part of Haman as he fell on Esther's couch, wasn't it? In addition to everything else that had happened there. Now, you might be asking yourself here, okay, what does this have to do? That's an interesting story. What does this have to do with my life? Well, I want to share some principles, I think, that come from the text here, and then ask some questions of us here today. I'm missing this again, to remember there are copies of notes on the library counter where you can see those here. What do we learn from this story? What does it have to do with you and me here today? Well, I think we see here that God is in control of both minor events and big events. He's in control of things like delivering an entire people from destruction. And he's also in control of somebody tripping and falling at just the absolute worst time for him. God is sovereign. I think we also see in this way that God places people in a position to help others. Do you believe that? Do you believe that God has put you in a position to where you can be of service to someone? I think we also, what? If we are disobedient, God will work through someone else. Do you think your decisions or my decisions that we make stop God from doing what he has determined to do? No. What happens? What are we doing? Well, God will just do it another way. But he will do it. Then also we see then, I think, in this part of the story here today, that we must be willing to pay a heavy price, if necessary, for our convictions. Well, when Esther said, what? If I perish, I perish. So again, okay, what does this have to do with me? Well, I might ask you some questions. Are you resting? Are you resting in God's sovereign power and wisdom? Remember we said last week here, the fact that God is sovereign, he's in control of things, doesn't mean that you and I are just like these mindless robots who are what? Who are being controlled by God. He's like a great cosmic string puller. That isn't the picture in Scripture at all of God's sovereignty, is it? You and I still make decisions and choices, and we're responsible to God for those things, even though, yes, God is sovereign over it all, and he will accomplish what he intends. But you and I can choose whether or not we're going to have faith and obey, or whether we're going to be disobedient and not have faith. So whatever your circumstance right now, do you believe that God is sovereign over that circumstance, even if it's a painful, especially if it's a painful circumstance right now? Do you believe God is sovereign over that? And are you resting then in his greater wisdom? Are you faithfully serving others in the place where God has placed you? You know, God has put us all in a position of some kind of influence or ability. And it's not all the same, is it? We're in different places, but all of us, though, are what? Are called to serve. So are you faithfully served? Esther was put in that position in order to be used to help save the Jewish people. What position have you been put in? What is God going to do in your life? And then finally, then this, are you willing? Are you willing to serve God's purposes no matter the cost? Now, you and I may say yes to God, and we may, the result may be circumstances that are, we think we would interpret as being wonderful and triumphant ultimately, as God triumphs through it. On the other hand, we may say yes to God, and the circumstances might be pretty difficult for us. And in fact, we see what? Again, in Hebrews chapter 11, some are even called to give their life. They gave up their life for their faith and their convictions. But still, God is sovereign over it all, isn't he? So if you and I say yes to God, can I guarantee us that we're going to like always how it turns out for us, or it's always going to be a great success? Well, from an eternal perspective, yeah, I can make that guarantee that we will always delight in how it turns out and that it will be a success. But from an earthly perspective, maybe not. But remember, as believers, what? It's about eternity, isn't it? It isn't about just the here and the now. So are you willing? Are you willing to serve God's purposes no matter the cost? Well, I think there's a lot to contemplate there. And as we leave the story here for today, the Jewish people still haven't been delivered, have they? That decree, Haman had conspired the king to order a decree that would result ultimately in the destruction of the Jewish people, even though Haman conveniently didn't tell the king everything about that. But that decree was still in effect, and it couldn't be overturned. So what is God now? Has he been boxed into a corner? And even God can't figure this one out? No. So what's God going to do next? Let's find out next week. But before then, let's pray. Lord, thank you for this time that we've had here to consider the story of Esther. And we saw, Lord, how you can work in and through circumstances and completely change and turn around things, that are shocking. But you did so, Lord, even in the littlest things of someone tripping, Lord, that these things can be significant under your sovereign control and power. So, God, we entrust ourselves to you and our lives and our circumstances to you now. We want to be men and women of faith, and maybe like Esther, maybe we're a little afraid of certain things. Maybe we're afraid to trust you. Maybe we're afraid of what the results or consequences might be. But Lord, we know that there is no better place for us to be than squarely at that center of your will and purpose for us in our lives. So God, we commit ourselves, we entrust ourselves to you now. We rest in your sovereign power and wisdom. God, show us in the place where you have put us in life how we might serve others. Your word tells us that you have purposes and plans for us that have been prepared from before the foundation of the world. Lord, show us how we might serve in the place where we have been called. And then, Lord, may we be willing to say yes and obey you, no matter the cost. Because we know that from the perspective of eternity, we will delight. And you will delight. You're pleased by that faith, Lord. And we will delight for eternity that we chose to trust you and believe you. And we pray all of these things in Jesus' name. Amen.